Welcome back. Hour 3 coming up with Clifford Carnicom. I'm Jeff Rentz, and glad you're here. We are riding the wave generated by the magnificent research of Clifford, and we're getting to a point, I think, of coming up with a real disturbing scenario as to where this, at least part of this chemtrail phenomenon, may have been leading us all or forcing us all to go. Clifford, I'm going to stand aside. We've got 1 hour, this third hour, to make a lot of time happen here in a short period of minutes. So go ahead.
Thank you, Jeff. I'll just fit things in as best as I can here. What I'd like to do is jump ahead in my outline a little bit and just give an example, one example of an application that I ran into, which now makes sense to me. I have to say that up until a few weeks ago or so, I didn't really feel as though I had any sense as to how frequencies are used. You know, my knowledge of electromagnetics is limited in extent. I do the best I can. I'm a ham radio operator, but there's still plenty I can learn. And I really didn't understand, how do you use these frequencies? How do you know what's being used, and how do you use it? And after I was, had done this work at the state that we've discussed thus far, I ran into a paper, actually, which I had seen probably 5 or 6 months ago and registered, but at this point, it now takes on a whole sort of different meaning to me in terms of an excellent demonstration and example of applying the technologies and medium that we're speaking of. Here's the title of this paper. I know it's technical, but we'll sort of punch through it. Here was the title of this thing. It's called Simulations of ELF Radiation Generated by Heating the High Latitude D Region. Translation is playing around with the ionosphere, mm-hmm. And generating ELF, extremely low frequency radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a couple things of interest. Guess who the paper is put out by to begin with? It's put out by the Naval Research Laboratory,
mm-hmm.
in Washington, D.C., the Plasma Physics Division, the Beam Physics Branch, is the folks that put out this paper.
What year was that?
It's fairly recent. I don't have, take it back, 1999.
Okay.
1999, it's just an abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you the punchline of what I have been able to understand is going on here. It's really pretty amazing because, it fits right in. Now, this is a simulation, but simulations are based for purposes of reality at some point. Here's what they're doing. They're saying that if you take a radio frequency energy, and remember we talked a little bit about the spectrum and the radio is below this threshold frequency that I'm coming up with. If you send a radio frequency into the ionosphere, and this is basically straight HARP technology, but now I understand it, I guess, is the benefit. You send this radio frequency energy, they call it a few megahertz, into the ionosphere. That causes the ionosphere to heat up. When it heats up, the conductivity, and that's a term I'll talk more about soon,
uh-huh.
The conductivity of the ionosphere changes. And there is a direct result that as the conductivity varies according to this heating and a current is generated in the ELF portion of the band. Now, what's important about ELF? It's something that you just mentioned. One important point about ELF, extremely low frequencies, you're talking about, 5 cycles, 10 cycles, extremely
uh-huh.
low,
mm-hmm.
up to 1,000, I think they call it.
That's hertz.
These frequencies are established, are known to directly affect biological systems.
Yep. 5 hertz, 10 hertz, 5,000 hertz. Royal Raymond Rife found that Hertzian frequencies, the harmonics therein, in some cases can destroy harmful bacteria and viruses. We do know, and I might raise very quickly, Clifford, the Kuznetsov experiments in Russia, which some years ago demonstrated quite clearly that the transmission of disease, certainly the disease condition itself, can be manifested by some kind of energy. And he supposed it was some kind of electromagnetic energy. And that was a fascinating experiment done in a laboratory with two pieces of tissue. We start with one. He separated the tissue into two, put them on either sides of a crystal glass, infected one piece of tissue with a mortal dose of a bacteria, and watched the other piece, the sister half on the other side of the crystal, become ill with the same physical characteristics, but with none of the bacteria present.
So now this is an open door for us to be investigating now.
Precisely.
The you know, biological implication of what's going on. Now, when you read the papers from these folks, they have their statements out there, hey, this is weak as can be, won't cause a problem at all, not even close. But I'm just not seeing those papers as being the whole story. Number one, they're not talking about consideration of using a modified atmosphere. They're not talking about a medium which is much more conductive than it should be. So the representation,
much more conductive than
right,
it should
the representation
be.
Representation of no harm. Yeah. I don't know that they're done in a fair presentation.
Well, since when do we trust them anyhow? Go ahead.
And something that's real important here to me is that you see that it's radio frequencies that are being used to control a current at another point. So the topic here is one of modulation. Modulation is a term that we also need to learn about, because this is basically one frequency using or controlling another frequency. And so that's why this notion of dealing with just radar waves or so doesn't hold. That's not what it's about. You now consider the range of frequencies available to you beneath that threshold frequency for basically modification, playing around in all kinds of numerous ways.
Yep.
Of using one frequency to control another, to generate another. And so if you're using a radio frequency wave as your main carrier, whatever, in the end, you may be dealing with ELF waves, which are truly the final objective. Remember, ELF waves, their claimed objective is one of communications and such. Also, ground probing radar and this type of thing are the official applications of that.
The official application. That's why they're talking about now how HARP may be used to find Osama bin Laden hiding in one of his caves. And so
absolutely.
Forth.
That's a part of this. That's a part of this technology. If you can generate ELF, what I'm saying is we have a medium that is surrounding us that appears to me to be sufficient and conducive to that transmission and creation of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an application that I wanted to mention to sort of open up the door in terms of there's some things that we need to be studying real quick and to learn what is potentially being done to us and to raise the alarm as is appropriate.
Just don't send your complaints to the EPA.
Apparently, they're not the most favorable agency to actually accomplish anything.
Unless they ask you for input, save your time.
Right, right. Do we have time to carry on into the next subject then?
We certainly do. We've got about 45 minutes on the hour left, and about 80% of that is talk time.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. What I think will start to emerge as the night goes on beyond these connections is also we're going to see a merging taking place between things that I'm measuring and those things which I am arriving at primarily through analysis, and that's really how this whole topic discussion came about tonight. I just felt as though we've got to get some information out that people can start to dig into for themselves. The next topic concerns one of measurement of current. And each one of these, although they exist as a separate topic side by side, they all establish a connection that I simply can't avoid the more that I understand. What happened was about probably 4 months ago or so, it would be in July or so, I said, we've got this metal in the air. It would seem reasonable to me that I'm postulating that there's a current flowing in the air that shouldn't be there. If that's true, mm-hmm. How do I go about measuring that current? Is it possible to measure current in the atmosphere?
Mm-hmm.
That was my problem posed before me. A very interesting problem for me. I keep finding myself going into all these numerous disciplines, you know, which I know a little bit about, and then I have to dig into and study. Basically, I became involved in electrical engineering for about 2 months, concentrating on a particular circuit that I designed and modified from a base circuit that I found, and the instrument of discussion here is what's called an electrometer. Measuring atmospheric current is possible. It's not real easy. You can't just go down and buy something very, let's say, inexpensively. You can if you have $1,000 or so to buy meters, but I don't have that. So to measure atmospheric current through layman resources is a difficult problem for me, at least.
All right. It's a great goal. It's an amazing task. We'll find out more from Clifford about that in just a minute. Don't forget his website, Carnicom, C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M, Carnicom.com, is the data center for the chemtrail phenomenon. And you can read again about Eastland's patents. We'll see if we have time for that. The illness issue is of grave significance and importance. We'll touch on that as well after this. All right, we're right back with Clifford Carnicom, plumbing the depths or the heights of the chemtrail mystery. Go right ahead, Cliff.
What I did was I combined the use of mathematics and study and some electrical engineering to construct and design what is called an electrometer, a very sensitive electrometer, I might add. An electrometer is a device that is useful for measuring static electricity. It actually sort of looks like magic until you know, get the science behind it. It's really quite fascinating to watch this thing as it's employed. To give you an idea of the sensitivity of this thing, if you were to take a comb, a plastic comb, and comb your hair, this meter, I've built a meter into it, this meter will deflect quite visibly and noticeably from a distance of, you know, 5 to 6 feet away is not an exaggeration at all.
Huh.
So if you move a plastic comb, you know, 5 or 6 feet away from this meter, you're going to see this meter register very easily.
Huh.
That's a fascinating thing to watch, and this meter will distinguish between positive or negative charge. And just so people understand the general layout, the Earth is negatively charged, and this is all expected and known. And the atmosphere is generally positive in nature. In fact, most of our environment seems to be positive. I think that we have an incredible skew that's taking place, though, because it's the air is positively charged, but it's not supposed to be that much. The ratio is like 250 to 200, apparently, from what I can gather. And so I construct this device. And I have to say it was a lot of fun because it's just an amazing thing to see this and to investigate your world in terms of electrical charge, positive and negative, and what's going on around us. And what happened was I had the disadvantage of not having enough money, let's say, to buy a calibrated meter. So I had to somehow try and come up with quantitative data again to attach to this meter. Through quite a bit of work, I came up with an algorithm, a method, probably involved about 10 steps. Primarily using mathematics and the definition of current and charge and this type of thing,
okay. And
came up with a method of quantitatively assigning measured electrical flow to this meter. One of the things that was interesting, I mean, it really was quite complex for me, and I wanted some confirmation on it because it's a little bit experimental and theoretical what I was doing. So I actually, after I outlined my algorithm, I sent it to the Department of Energy for their response, because they have an Ask a Scientist, you know, board that they run, Newton BBS or whatever. And I sent them an inquiry asking them, is this method sound, what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
Does this all make sense? And they wrote me back, and they said, this is beyond the scope of our service. And
you didn't say knowledge, you said service, didn't it?
Yes, yes. So I was unable to get any help from them. Curiously enough, I also put it up on some electrical engineering boards. Didn't really get any response at all, but curiously enough, about a week ago, I went back and I found one person had left a response in detail, and he basically confirmed the soundness of the method. So, to the best of my ability, it does appear to be legitimate in terms of what I'm doing here. Now, atmospheric current does exist. It's known. It's a fundamental physical property of the atmosphere and the Earth. The electrical current flowing. It's a very small number we're dealing with. The numbers that I end up with, the expected numbers are on the order of, it'd be on the order of like 1 to 2 microamps of current would be expected to be flowing through the air.
Okay.
Now, a hair dryer or a microwave takes something like, 10 amps, something like that.
Right.
You're talking about a millionth of 1 amp.
Now, you'd expect to find that naturally.
Yes. Okay. Yes. This is what should be there from what
right.
I can gather anywhere. Yeah. I actually see ranges from a portion of a microamp
uh-huh.
up to, say, 1 to 2 microamps.
All right. This is what we expect through Clifford's research to find in the atmosphere. We would expect. All right.
Right. So when I did this work, it was very systematic, and I did it over and over and over. I just kept measuring and measuring and measuring and applying the algorithm. And no matter what I did, it was pretty much consistent. Over many, many days, different times, good weather, here's what I get. I end up at a number roughly 11 to 13 microamps. Now, again, my work is all open to examination, and someone else, if they can help me and tell me I'm wrong,
mm-hmm.
then I adjust my ways.
So 10 times what you would expect to find,
yes.
more than that.
Yes. This is what I find, and what was amazing was how consistent it was, no matter how I did it, because it actually involves a differential equation where you're measuring current over time. It uses a basic definition. And even though the circumstances changed through the day, the end result was always the same, that I would end up at this magnitude,
mm-hmm.
Which was dependent upon my analysis and understanding of the circuit and I've designed and all that type of thing. So all I can say is this is what I end up with. And what happened was I just let that thing sit because I had no confirmation. I had no one to tell me, is this real or not? So I just kept recording the values, doing the work. It exists as a study, and then I just let it sit. And it probably sits for 2 or 3 months
mm-hmm.
before I now start doing the other work that we're talking about with plasma physics and this type of thing, right?
All right. Fascinating. Let's take that point right there and hold it. You see the parallel tracks here that are coalescing, and we'll hear where they join in just a couple of minutes as we continue with Clifford Carnicom. I'm Jeff Rentz, and we are getting the latest possible insight into what apparently is going on in many, if not most, places of the world called chemtrails. Okay, and we are back with Clifford, and you see where remember all the work he has done over the years is being done out of the goodness of his heart and out of his own pocketbook for all of us. That's the part that we need to keep in mind as we ponder all of these amazing things he has come up with. And he is, you can tell from listening to the description of how he went about his work, he is essentially largely self-taught. This is science, I think, standing up and shining as brightly as you're going to see it shine. Go ahead, Clifford. We've got the parallel tracks. There are several of them. Let's see where they come together.
Thank you, Jeff. And to keep things in perspective, one source that I found on this electrical current in the atmosphere, what they say is during like a major storm, if you have a really heavy-duty storm going on,
uh-huh.
that you can get up to 10 microamps. Okay?
That's an electrical storm.
Yes, like there's a whole lot of activity going on and things are really charged up there.
Okay, all right.
And so, you know, what's happening there then is if my work is correct, what it's saying is the results I was getting under fair weather, normal, you know, mild conditions.
Should be under extreme weather conditions.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And as a
Unless they're being artificially created. Here's another interesting thing that has developed.
I told you I did this some time ago. It's been sitting for a couple of months.
Right.
I just picked up the meter again a week ago or so, started to look at it again, and what's happening right now is that this thing is just, it's playing off the scale. In other words, this meter was designed and developed to be very sensitive within a certain range.
Sure.
And it is a very narrow range. It's a really incredible thing to watch. But what's happening now is it appears to me that the current flow may have increased to the point where my meter is no longer usable, that the circuit
needs to be... It's off the scale of your meter?
Yes, it appears as though it needs to be redesigned to accommodate a greater magnitude of value. That's the way it appears to me. I really cannot get readings right now because the time differential is just too short. It's dependent upon time measurements. And so that's an interesting side note that after the lapse of a couple of months, which we may also take note, as we said, that the aerosol activity has got especially heavy during those last couple of months, that I am in the situation where my meter is going to need to be redesigned to pursue that study.
Yeah.
So you have a measurement that's taking place that indicates a certain value, which is of, let's say, great interest. Parallel to that, you have analytical studies taking place, which are attempting to examine the fundamental characteristics of the atmosphere as characterized in a plasma state, of which we have discussed the plasma frequency being one of those fundamental defining characteristics of that state. In addition to that plasma frequency, there is another entity which is equally fundamental in characterizing the behavior of that plasma. And that is the conductivity. And this is another whole line of research and analysis that I have engaged in, and that is to attempt to assess the conductivity of this altered atmosphere, in addition to using the ionosphere as a reference point. Okay. Actually, what I'm doing is I'm looking at the conditions of the ionosphere, the normal atmosphere as it has always been portrayed and of which certain values are available that characterize that, and then this state, this altered state of affairs that I'm finding that is basically sort of in between these two, and I'm arriving at results for defining both a plasma frequency and a what's called conductivity. Conductivity is, it's like the opposite of resistance, for this altered state. And here's what happened, and this is partly what certainly prompted me to make contact with you again. What occurred was I ended up with a value for the expected current flow in the atmosphere by analysis alone, which traced all the way back through to that original discussion we had tonight from visibility. That whole lineage that takes place, mm-hmm. visibility, mm-hmm. Number of particles, number of free electrons, plasma frequency, conductivity, current density is what it's called. That whole lineage, I arrived at a number in terms of what I see and study around me.
Okay.
That number is matching exactly with what I was measuring.
Hmm. How shocked were you about that?
It was, well, I think you can imagine.
Yeah, that's almost overwhelming to contemplate that.
And
now,
like
all
I said,
the work
I am not claiming to be right on everything I am doing. I am claiming to do the best that I can.
It sure brought you into the right room, though, no matter what.
Right, to solve the problems that are facing us. And I do like to look at things in more than one way. And I do like different angles. And what I am saying is that I am being led to this place of identification and consideration of the electrical properties of the atmosphere being altered in a way which is it's fundamentally significant as a property of the Earth, of our world. The analysis of data shows to me that it's been fundamentally altered, and which can lead to no other consideration than that the propagation of that current is potentially the primary subject and target matter of the affair to begin with.
Wow. Wonder if Mr. Eastland is listening.
I know a lot of people are from some of these folks.
Well, I know a lot of people are, Clifford, who are very concerned about your headway. Not that they're too concerned about the cat really getting out of the bag, because most people are pretty well diverted in day-to-day living. Fascinating. An incredible odyssey. And we'll come right back and get a final wrap-up in our last segment with Clifford as to where he thinks this may be directly leading. And remember, it's all being paid for by us. Okay, we're right back. Last segment with Clifford already tonight. It went fast. Here's another note, Clifford, from George. And he says, what Mr. Carnicom is describing is known as carrier frequency. Carrier waves in the ELF and long wave spectrum have been used in, for instance, CB radio to communicate around the world using skip technologies, whereby a wave is bounced off the ionosphere and recaptured at stations many thousands of miles away. The carrier wave is excited, selectively energized. A particular carrier wave is excited, selectively energized to carry a message when necessary, and otherwise becomes a standing wave, undetectable, until it is energized again. It would be very simple to measure the current in the atmosphere of a carrier wave using a signal strength meter tuned right directly to the frequency of that particular wave, the carrier wave. You need to know the exact frequency and wavelength, otherwise you will need to sample with oscilloscopes until you get a variance from the background. The interesting thing about the whole carrier wave technology is that it needs to be at extremely low power. Otherwise, it leaves the atmosphere, goes right through the ionospheric level, and heads out into space. With as little as 0.1 watt of power at wavelengths of 9 meters or longer, you can excite a wave and make it circumglobally receptible, thereby allowing the dispersal of potentially damaging radio frequencies.
I think that George is undoubtedly a helpful source and resource for this problem.
No doubt.
And I hope that we can make contact. The basic proposition which is being put forth here is fairly simple, and that is that it is proposed that the atmosphere has been turned into a conductor. That's the argument which needs to either be proven or disproven. Aside, you know, we'll have to make our priorities in terms of what's covered in the last few minutes. But as another aside, in terms of this business of measurement, which is important to me, I will also say I have another set of measurements which have more than a mild level of curiosity from me, and they also extend back 6 months, and they also are measurements which I have just sat idle on, again, because I had no confirmation or I don't have the tools or resources to substantiate it. And that is one of radio frequency measurement. I do have a frequency counter that I was able to acquire. This frequency counter does measure radio waves, actually a broad range of radio waves. I will say that I am almost continuously and repeatedly monitoring and finding a continuously, what appears to be a continuously varying RF signal in the magnitude range of roughly 3.5 to 7 megahertz, primarily centered on about 4 megahertz. It is of more than passing interest that these frequencies that I appear to be picking up on a sustained basis do correspond exactly to the preferred range of HARP transmissions.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
These measurements, again, need either proving or refuting from other sources and other locations. I did have the meter transported to Colorado, and the measurements were occurring along that trip. I have no meter to compare it to. Am I getting completely erroneous information? I would like to know, but I know that I am seeing a convergence and confluence of both measurements as well as analytical work that strongly supports the proposition that the atmosphere is indeed in a conductive state.
It has been put into a conductive state.
In addition, I'd like to mention, because in the end, you see, we want the truth. That's what it's all about. And I want to mention I've been sort of questioning and asking about the other scenarios that are being mentioned. You know, one of the grand theories that is out there is about the global shield for global warming type thing.
Right.
And, you know, I started to look at a paper that's circulated prominently for that argument. And I've seen the paper probably several months ago, but I'll tell you, when I read it last week or so ago, there's a word that really stuck in my mind as I read that paper. And if you remember what that's about, it's about Teller and his proposition that putting aerosols into the air, you can reduce global warming.
Right.
If you look at the report, what I see is a keyword showing up that I have completely been oblivious to before, and the word is dielectric. The paper refers to the introduction. It appears to be the primary thesis is the introduction of dielectric aerosols. Here is what is important. A dielectric is an insulator. A dielectric does not conduct.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of a dielectric.
Hmm.
The aerosols that we are speaking of that are being identified repeatedly over and over and over are metals. They are conductors. It doesn't fit.
Not with what Teller said, no.
It doesn't fit. And I found in that same paper there is a reference to the that says we have also considered the introduction of aluminum aerosols, and they say, but this would be very damaging or would have serious environmental consequences.
Ah, environmental as in health, potentially. They knew.
I seriously have to question the viability of that thesis based upon the data that is available. In addition to that, there are size issues that come up with that.
Hmm.
My best analysis indicates a size range anywhere from a half micron to a couple of microns for primary sizes involved.
Uh-huh.
This has to do with light properties, scattering, light scattering theory we were talking about, haze,
this
type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you start dealing with aerosols that are 10 microns or a tenth of a micron, as what I'm finding in these reports about that hypothesis of stopping global warming,
mm-hmm.
they don't fit either. So I have two fundamental contradictions showing up right now that I cannot accommodate into the analysis.
Doesn't sound like global warming is the answer, folks.
In addition, if you look at this question of ozone protection, here's a statement. Listen to this statement from another paper. Aircraft emissions of nitrogen oxides and water vapor add to this depletion effect by creating ice crystals that serve as a base for ozone-destroying reactions. So it also appears contradictory to me that there would be a supposition of aircraft operations to mediate ozone damage when...
Got it. You don't remediate it, you exacerbate it. I understand.
So I know we only have a few minutes left, but I guess what I'd like to say is that I'm looking for a proposition that is consistent with all of the data and all of the theories. And if you consider such suggestions as have been reasonably made, such as weather modification, transfer of particulate matter by design, the illness, health, and increasing mortality data that is readily available, the motivation of the question as to why you would use a metal as your aerosol base, the degraded visibility conditions, which are easily documented, and another side one that we didn't have time to talk about, but the whole radar anomaly phenomenon.
On the weather charts,
The visitors that have taken an interest in this information since the research first began, of a strongly military nature, if you are looking for one thesis that appears to be consistent with all of these agendas that have been postulated, the one that appears to me to be the most consistent, the most comprehensive, does by necessity involve the postulate that the air has basically been altered to be a conductor.
That means, friends, our atmosphere has been taken over and turned into a tool by somebody, some group, some faction, some power base to do potentially many, many things, not all of which are necessarily salutary to our physical, mental, and environmental well-being.
You know, many, many things is really a key word because just think in general terms. If I can send energy from point A to point B, that means I can do things. And I can do lots of things.
And if I can send energy from point A to worldwide, I own the world.
So, you know, one cannot deny the military implications in the data which has emerged and the consistency with all observed studies and reports which have been done by numerous citizens beyond myself over a three-year period. And if one considers the technology of HAARP, which was introduced, you know, in my work probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, and think of the technology not occurring up in Alaska, but occurring anywhere that the medium is suitable for the transmission, then I think you have a more accurate portrayal of how the energy is likely to be used. There's no restriction to Alaska on this.
No, of course not. A HAARP array can be trucked around, and I understand three or four tractor-trailer rigs and set up anywhere.
Out of curiosity, there's one about 40 miles down the road. There's an array right about 40 miles down the road. It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
It's like a little mini HAARP. But, you know, and who's to say it has to be ground-based? But the technology makes perfect sense that on a regional and or local scale that you can propagate this energy in any desired form that you wish.
For almost a limitless number of results. It's mind-boggling. Well, ultimately, it is anxiety-producing when you consider that the people, again, who are in control of this technology, this potential control of the planet, which I think is ultimately where it would lead, are not necessarily benevolent folks like most of us are. Clifford, would you agree?
I would entirely, Jeff.
All right, my friend. Thank you. Magnificent work. I salute you. I thank you on behalf of countless thousands of Americans for your work. We will talk again soon. Take care.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Have a good night.
You're welcome. And we'll talk to you in 21 hours.